This is the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast.
And I just decided, hey, you know what? I want to go big and I want to play for University of Louisville.
You're listening to the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast, where we discuss tangible tips, tricks, and best practices for becoming financially free. The show is designed for people who want to either start real estate investing or for those who want to scale their real estate business.
What's up, guys? This is Jonathan Farber, host of the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast. This show is all about achieving financial freedom as fast as possible so you can do whatever makes you happy in life. For me, that vehicle was real estate, and it's how I achieved financial freedom at 27. If you want to know how I got started, my journey is presented in a YouTube video posted in the show notes, and I post daily in our private Facebook group about my favorite topics and day-to-day strategies. I appreciate you guys being here, and let's get started. Oh, by the way, reach out if you ever need help. I try to keep my calendar open to talk to anyone that needs it or has any quick questions. See you guys. Talk to you later. What's going on, guys? Today we have an awesome episode with close friend Paul Lodgson. Paul has an awesome story. Paul and I actually first connected on TikTok, believe it or not, where I saw him doing cold call videos on wholesaling in Louisville, Kentucky. And some of them were blowing up because he just had a great demeanor and an awesome talk track with persuading and assisting sellers that maybe wanted to get out of a bad situation with their home. So that's how we first connected. Paul lives in Louisville, Kentucky. He played football at the U of L, which is a really cool story we talk about on the podcast. He walked onto the team after being at a smaller college, just took a shot and made it. And that's kind of his mentality and everything, which you'll hear in the show. And he just jumped into wholesaling after college. He started doing corporate work and wasn't really liking it at all, realized it didn't have a path to making the type of money he wanted to make. So he started learning about wholesaling, got on bigger pockets, talked to people, figured out how to get started in it. And he got started in 2020. Fast forward just a short period of time, and he's closed about 40 deals at this point, which is actually insane. And one of the fastest growth paths I think we've had on the podcast, from like a 15-month trajectory of getting started in something and now being a full-time wholesaler and running a really successful business. So I think you guys are going to get a lot of the show. We dug into kind of all things getting started, wholesaling, building a marketing strategy, outsourcing things, and how Paul thinks about those day to day. The main learning I had was just start. Like, with whatever place you're in, you can start and you can figure out a way to force some urgency. So for Paul, he kind of just like put his back against the wall and said, I'm just jumping out of corporate and I need to do this. And once he did that, he figured out what he needed to do to be successful. And believe it or not, he figured it out and he got it done. And now he's building a successful business, which is just really cool. You'll hear it on the show. Today's tangible tip. He talks about a cardboard envelope that he used as one of his first like marketing campaigns, and he shows what it looks like. So I recommend checking it out on YouTube, but he goes through his like original marketing, and he used a cardboard envelope from the post office. He said they're free, and he would handwrite them and put them on people's posts on their doorsteps. And he said the open rate was like in the 90s, because when you get one of these things, you want to know what it is. And he was starting that way and found a lot of deals. That's how he found his first deal and then scaled that. So really cool story, a lot of tactical stuff. If you're considering wholesaling or want to improve your wholesaling business, I definitely recommend digging into this episode and maybe jotting down some notes. You're going to get a lot out of it. So without any further ado, Paul Lodgson. All right, Paul, what is going on, man? Welcome to the podcast. Excited to have you here.
Hey, thank you, Jonathan. I really appreciate it. Seeing what you're doing, man. I'm glad we finally got connected and happy to be here, man.
I used to talk about it more, but just as we started adding so many people to the show, it was a little harder. But like talking about how I first connected with the guests, or how, you know, we first connected, and the power of social media, man. Like we'll talk about it, I'm sure. But I first saw you probably like 7 or 8 months ago, a long time ago, just from one of your videos on TikTok that went viral, the ones that we were talking about before of like the cold calling videos. But it's just so cool. Like before we jump into anything, it like, I don't know if it's just me, probably not, but the amount of networking that's gone on TikTok specifically, but social media in general, man, I've been so surprised by it. But have you found that to be like a way to meet other people, investors? Like I assume you have, but just, I don't know. It's been so cool for me to see.
Yeah, no, TikTok has led to a lot of open doors for me. You know, lots of podcast opportunities similar to this one, but also doing deals with other people on TikTok. I've never thought that TikTok would lead to me doing deals, but people in my market have seen what I'm doing on TikTok. And even like a well-known musician reached out to me and we did a deal together off of TikTok. I was
No way.
We did his first deal together. Yeah.
Damn, that's so cool. Wow.
Yeah. Crazy thing was I'd actually been to one of his concerts and I was like, I don't know. It's wild. The power of TikTok and social media.
All right. Well, that's a topic we'll come back around on, but it's just always funny to hear people's stories with it. And especially since that's how I first saw your stuff. And then, you know, we realized we had a lot of mutual friends and mutual kind of business, but it's just a cool thing that's happening right now specifically. So Paul, before we dig too deep into anything, you mind just giving our listeners a background on how you got into this? And then from a high level, also what you do today?
Yeah. So my name is Paul Logsdon. I'm 26 years old from Louisville, Kentucky. And, you know, I went the whole college route, get a good job, go to college. So I graduated with a history degree from University of Louisville. The plan was to go back and get a master's and become a high school principal, but did like a few internships, found out really like hanging around with kids just wasn't what I wanted to do. I wanted to have impact, but I didn't want to sacrifice like my time and ability to make money. So started looking for other opportunities, got into like management positions. And that's when I really realized the value of my time. So I looked for another opportunity where I could be paid based on my performance. That's when I got into door-to-door sales, taught me a whole lot about just communicating with people and sales. And that was the start of my entrepreneurship journey. Read, you know, really got into self-development, read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, wanted to get into real estate, but didn't really have any money. So I just like studying bigger pockets. Finally, in January of 2020, I found out about wholesaling real estate and it was just complete game changer for me. So that's what I do now is wholesale real estate full time.
And for those who don't know, we've talked about it, but for those who don't know, can you just define how you think about what wholesaling is?
Yeah. So wholesaling, I have a little bit of a different definition on it. Wholesaling is where you get an asset and you sell the asset, but the asset isn't what you would think. You know, the asset, most people think houses, something physical. In the case of wholesaling, the asset is the contract. So I go out, I find homeowners who want to sell their house, negotiate a great price, put that house under contract for that great price. That contract becomes an asset that I can then sell to someone who wants to buy that property. So that's kind of how I explain it. I package up assets and resell them.
For sure. I like that. That is different. I feel like a lot of people complicate the definition of wholesaling. Like, just doesn't have to be that complicated. One other thing I just want to touch on, just some people might be watching this on video, but most people are probably listening on audio. They might not see that jersey in the background. Can you just talk a little bit about that experience and what that jersey is and what that was all about?
Yeah. So out of high school, you know, I played football in high school. I wasn't really strongly recruited or anything like that. But I put together my own highlight film and sent it out and ended up going to a small school that you probably never heard of called University of the Cumberlands. Super small school in Kentucky. It's like even smaller than the high school that I went to. And I played there for 2 years and I just decided, hey, you know what? I want to go big and I want to play for University of Louisville. It's my hometown. It's kind of like my dream. So ended up putting my application to transfer and tried out for the team and made the team as a walk-on and played out the rest of my football career at U of L. It was great. It was a great time. So my last year was in 2017. I got to play with Lamar Jackson, Heisman Trophy winner. And just, it was just an all around really great experience.
Wow, that's just really cool. Did you have like a feeling that you were going to make the team? Like, did you think you were good enough, or was it more of like a long shot and like an unlikely thing to happen?
It was like one of those things where I burned the boats and I went for it. And it was one of those things where it's like, you know, you ever have a vision and you just lay in bed and you'll start like your arm or your leg will kick because you want it so bad. It was like one of those things. So I just wanted it so bad that I literally just showed up at the stadium and was trying to talk to the right people because they don't advertise when they have tryouts, but just trying to get my foot in the door any way possible. And what it was one night I was in my dorm room at University of the Cumberlands and I was watching University of Louisville play Florida State. And it was a crazy game. It was like a Thursday night game. So it was like a blackout or something. And I just remember watching and thinking to myself, there's really nothing different between those guys like on TV and myself, you know, besides, yeah, I don't know. There definitely is difference in skill level. But I believe that I could be there. So that's what I did.
Okay. That's awesome, man. So you do that, go down the corporate path, realize that that's not, or you start going down that path, realize that that's not going to be what you want to be doing. And similar to myself, I started down that path. I think I probably didn't have enough confidence to just leave it immediately. I felt like I needed a little bit more of like coverage to then build a side hustle. So I always respect people that are able to keep that burn the boats mentality back against the wall, just like you did with football, and do it in your business too. So you mentioned you started learning about beginner strategies and bigger pockets and didn't have a lot of money at the time. And I think that's a place that a lot of people are in. And bigger pockets, I think, does a great job, general education, but I feel like they don't necessarily maybe talk to that all the time of people that don't have enough credit to do a house hack, or they don't have enough money for a down payment, or they don't have relationships, and they don't maybe necessarily want to tailor their platform directly to any one thing like multifamily or Airbnb or wholesaling. But wholesaling, I think, is one of the best options for people that don't have a lot of money, don't have a lot of credit, and kind of have a can-do attitude. And it's just straight economics. It's straight capitalism. If you can grind and hustle and figure it out, like no one is stopping you and there is no barrier to entry unlike the other. So I'd love to hear from you kind of how you stumbled into it and then what it was like getting some momentum at the beginning, because like anything, the beginning is hard. The beginning of anything is hard. You know, it's like that expression, a plane burns 80% of its fuel just on takeoff. It's true. It sucks. So I would love to hear kind of what was going on in your head at that time and how you actually got moving.
Yeah. So like I said, I was listening to podcasts, a bunch of Bigger Pockets podcasts, January of 2020. And for some reason, I usually don't listen to them on YouTube, but for some reason I was listening to a few on YouTube. And the next video that popped up was about just wholesaling real estate. I think it was Max Maxwell. And then all of a sudden, all these like wholesaling videos started popping up and I watched so many of them. I got so many ideas and started taking action immediately. So the first thing I did, I was still working a full-time job. I would just handwrite letters and go like driving for dollars and just drop them off on people's doorsteps. Mm-hmm. And I did that probably thousands of times. And that's what got me my first deal. You know, that's what got me my first deal. But as far as getting the momentum going, I think there's, everyone says you have to take massive action, but there's like a couple elements that are missing before you take action. One, you have to want it really bad. You have to have like a burning desire. Like you can't just say you want it. You have to actually want it really bad in your heart. And then you have to have faith and belief that you can accomplish whatever you're trying to accomplish. So for me, what gave me that faith and belief was listening to podcasts, listening to people who were just like me and had just got their first deal or had done 10 deals and they're just they're just normal people. If you look at who people who wholesale, they're just normal people. Like, I like to say, I like to think I'm a pretty normal guy, you know. John, I don't know. Do you think you're a pretty normal guy?
Yeah, I do.
Just normal people like me and Jonathan. And that's really what gave me the belief that I could take this action, that I could write 1,000 handwritten letters and it would give me a deal, you know? Mm. And as a matter of fact, like every letter that I was writing, I really believed that that homeowner was going to call me. So that's what helped me get started. Took me probably a month to get my first deal. And then after that, gaining momentum after the first deal, because you're thinking like, wow, okay, now I just closed my first deal. Can I do this again? Is this really real? What if I can't do it again? What if I can't get more wholesale deals? So really sticking to what's working is what helped me gain momentum and focused on one thing. I was focused on talking to sellers and getting deals. Now, I didn't really worry about the buyer stuff whenever I first started. I didn't really worry about repairs. I was just focused on talking to sellers.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many good things you just mentioned there. The first one that jumps out at me is a lot of people, I think they become enlightened to personal development and business development, which is cool. And then I think sometimes they want to just jump in and take massive action. And without having a burning desire and without having education, it's hard to take the correct massive action or set the right goals, in my opinion, you know, because it can go either way. If someone's setting goals, they can set them too high, which I don't mean too high. I like big goals, but their sequencing is going to be off, you know? So if you have no plan and your goal is to make $50 million in your first year, that could be a frustrating goal. Or if it's too low, because you saw someone else tell you that that's what your goal should be, then maybe your ceiling is too low and you're going to get bored doing it. So I think there's kind of a sweet spot with it of getting educated, thinking about what your kind of like action level is, your desire level is, and then from there coming up with some goals and coming up with a plan to take massive action. So I think that's really important. And the other thing I love that you just mentioned for anyone listening, this is something I see people getting stuck on all the time, is they start learning about stuff in the wrong sequence, you know, like, and they're focused on the wrong stuff in the wrong sequence. Like you knew, and you know, the main KPI, the main important thing to track in wholesaling is getting in front of distressed sellers, having conversations. But most people, I think they're thinking about that. They're thinking about how do I do the repairs on the property, building my buyer's list. Bottom line, if you focus on the next thing you need to, you'll figure out the next thing after that, you know, but I think people spread themselves thinking about the wrong stuff. So for you, when you were kind of getting started, what did that first deal look like? I know you mentioned did it with a handwritten letter, maybe not, but how did the first deal come about? And, you know, like talk us through that if you could.
Yeah. So actually I got one of these laying around. So what I would do was on my lunch breaks or any break I had, I would write handwritten letters just on a yellow piece of paper and I would put them in this envelope. This is the key right here, Jonathan. And for anybody who isn't watching my video, this is like a cardboard envelope from the post office. They're free. I don't know. Don't tell them I sent you. But I would put that on people's doorstep. And like, if you get that on your doorstep, you're going to open it, right? So I'd say it probably had like a 99% open rate. And actually, I got a lot of calls back. Some of them were really rude and ugly. Like, what makes you think I want to sell my house? And, you know, not really wanting to tell somebody why I picked their house because it's the ugliest one on the street. And finally, just the one called me that said, hey, I got a house that I want to sell, or I got your letter and I want to sell you my house. His situation was he went through divorce. So it was a single man living in a four-bedroom house, like a two-story four-bedroom house. The wife, the ex-wife moved out, the kids moved out, and he was the one stuck holding the bag. He was the one stuck with a mortgage payment and he just couldn't afford it. So I went to go see him. House was pretty rough. It was pretty rough. The reason that I targeted his house is because it was after a windstorm and some siding had blown off. Remember it very clearly. There's like a car in the driveway, a broken down car, jacked up garage door. few broken windows. And he showed me around. I got a contract out of a Facebook group, like a wholesaling Facebook group, and we got it signed. He just wanted the mortgage paid off. And I said, yeah, we can do that. I'm pretty sure we can do that. And then after that, I really had, like I said, I didn't have any buyers, really didn't know anything about opening escrow. I hadn't even talked to a title company. So like doing all the stuff that they say, like that you should do, like I didn't do. I didn't find a wholesale friendly title company or anything like that. But I knew somebody who was really crushing it in Louisville wholesaling. They've been doing it for the past 5 years. Like they're really, really crushing it. And I took my deal to them. I was like, hey, show me what to do. Here's this, you know, contract. Here's the details. What can we do? After that, he brought his buyer over, his one of his best buyers, and we got it sold. Ended up making $26,000 gross profit, and we split that 50-50.
Wow, that's awesome. And a cool thing there that I want people to take is you may not have had the buyer, but it's such a collaborative industry that if you could partner with someone who's an established wholesaler, they may have a buyer. And then you could work something out to get the deal sold or get some help on that. Because one thing, Paul, I'm curious your take on this. Something that I have found a lot of times to be a bad common practice is that people, they just start these partnerships together. And I think a lot of times it's premature. Like they'll maybe have that scenario and they'll go to that person and be like, hey, you know, you want to be in business together? You want to partner? I'm much more of a believer in doing it on a one-off basis because, you know, other than that, partnerships can get a little messy if you're not very aligned. And I like what you talked about there. You had a deal, you had a one-off opportunity to bring value to someone, they could bring value to you, and you did the deal. Like, did you ever think about partnering with people? Or, I mean, it sounds like in that case, you just had a one-off situation and it made sense to partner with someone.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with what you're saying. When you're just getting started, I don't think it makes sense to partner. I really don't think it does because you're a solopreneur and if you have a partner, you're both going to be kind of like doing the same task. Finding this partner, what it was, instead of having two new partners, I was the new partner. And then I had a partner who was like way, way more experienced than me. So you talk about adding value to the relationship. He added value because he was teaching me how to close a deal. You know, I was watching his every move in that aspect. And I was adding value because it's like, you're getting a deal that you didn't have to pay any marketing for, you know? So the return on that is a lot, 100x.
Right. Just kind of a free ball, you know, he's being compensated for his experience and his network, you know, as opposed to you were being compensated for doing the deal and hustling in that case.
Yeah, it's a win-win. And if you have two, if you're like just getting started and you're trying to find a partner, I think that's more of like, I don't know. I probably can't say it on a podcast. I probably shouldn't.
Okay. If you don't want to, no pressure at all. So how did your marketing style, your marketing, you know, campaign change from then to now? Or what did your marketing looking for off market deals look like at the beginning? You know, was it just those letters? Were you doing calls, texts? Was it you? Did you have a team? If you could maybe just like paint the picture of what your marketing strategy looked like, you know, early days.
Yeah. So marketing is probably like the foundation. I call it the blood of your wholesaling business. So in order to generate leads, you have to have some sort of marketing. I started out doing the handwritten letters. The next thing I did was bought a big old box of 100 bandit signs with my cell phone number on it. Didn't get a deal from that. Made my phone ring. Next thing I did was cold call, and I would just get these people's number off of like True People Search or something like that, one of the free skip tracing websites. And I would literally just punch the number into my phone, but that was really inefficient that I found. So really dove deep into the cold calling and ended up getting a dialer and finding the best data. So started cold calling, you know, using Mojo Dialer's single line dialer. Because I didn't really have a lot of money. And mm-hmm. I was kind of intimidated by calling three people at the same time. So I used a single line dialer and I got another deal off of cold calling a list that I pulled from PropStream and just put it into, you know, single line dialer. I believe it was the list. This is a good list. I really like this list that I'm about to say. It was properties that were vacant and owned for 20 or more years. That's going to be a really old, dirty piece of property.
Well, why is that? Why is that a dirty property that has a decent chance of being a conversion?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's vacant. So it's not making any money. No one's living there. It has no value besides, you know, it has value, but it's not cash flowing. It's not really an asset. It's at that point, it's a depreciating asset. You know, the owner is probably worried about people breaking in, stealing the copper, squatting in there, setting on fire, vandalism. And I mean, once you get people squatting in your vacant property, that can really turn into a nightmare. So if you have that vacant property and it's been owned for 20 years, that tells you that it's probably about time for the homeowner to sell it. Mm-hmm. I think the average length of homeownership is about 7 years. Don't quote me on that. Mm-hmm. And then you're looking at someone who has almost, you know, owned a property for double that length. So
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was, you started pulling lists and, you know, going more, I think it sounds like a little bit more systems, kind of doing stuff with technology. So what was the progression from what you were doing, you know, at the very beginning to now? What does your marketing look like today? You know, if you could give us a little bit of behind the curtain view.
Yeah. So the transition was, you know, I found out that cold calling, it works great, but it's not scalable when you're doing it yourself. So I was still working a full-time job when I was cold calling, and I decided to hire a virtual assistant, and they were working 15 hours a week, because I didn't really know, like, I was just starting small, right? It was like $90 a week to hire this cold caller. And that helped a lot. So we did a few deals that way. Then I bumped her up. I doubled up to 30 hours a week. And then it just made sense, like, to go full time. Why not just do 40 hours? And then I got to the point where I could afford multiple cold callers. So that's what we do now. Is we have three cold callers at the moment. They're all using a dialer. And I kind of shifted my philosophy on virtual assistants because I don't really like to manage them myself. The cold callers, that is. So we kind of shifted to an outsourced third-party management system for the cold callers, where it's like really plug and play. You give them the money and the data, and then they bring back leads, which is really cool. And basically, whenever the cold callers, they get somebody who's interested in hearing an offer or they're interested in selling their house, that's what we consider a lead. So anybody who says yes and they want to talk to us, we want to talk to them. They'll then submit that lead into a web form, which goes directly into the CRM. And then once it shows up in the CRM, it'll appear as like labeled new. And then we come in and, you know, up until the past couple of weeks, I would come in and call these new leads myself and just pre-qualify them based on the four pillars, which four pillars just briefly are, what's the condition of the property? When do you want to sell it? Like, what's your timeline? Why do you want to sell it? What's your motivation? And then what's your asking price? Those are really the four things. And I really like to have at least two of those things to be qualified for an appointment. But that's the goal. So they come in as a new lead. The goal is to get in front of them as soon as possible. Go see the house, especially if they're super motivated.
That's cool. Did you say the name of that service? That sounds pretty cool. It's kind of like a plug and play marketing service.
Yeah. It's not really like, they're not really like branded, or they don't really have a social presence. It's kind of underground, but I can definitely, if anyone's interested, I can definitely connect you guys. The guy's name, I can't say it.
Okay. Got to hit you up. Leave a little suspense. You might get hit up a little bit after this one then.
That's okay.
All right. Okay. So is the criteria that they're looking for like something that you train them, or they know, you said the criteria is if they have any interest in selling, that's a lead. And then you and your team come in and can qualify it to see, you know, what the exit strategy would be. Is that about right?
Yeah, exactly. And the philosophy is any positive response that they get, submit them to the CRM, because my worst fear is having, a $3 an hour virtual assistant or $4 an hour virtual assistant in a different country determining who's motivated and who's not. So I don't want them to be worried about like figuring out who's motivated and who's not. So just give me all the positive responses, and then we'll have someone more skilled filter through those responses.
For sure. Gotcha. Okay. So what happens after that? Because I think, you know, a lot of people, they may now start get to a point where they generate leads, you know, if they do, that's definitely an accomplishment, but they get people that are coming back to them and saying, yeah, I'll sell. And now they're having trouble qualifying. You know, there's like your stereotypical, like make me an offer tire kicker type lead. Then there's your true distress lead. So, you know, that, and this can be a good time to also talk about TikTok, because that's how I first, you know, saw your stuff, and you were calling people and you were qualifying them and you were dealing with objections. And it was just really cool to hear. So what is the process that you like to do to qualify them on the phone, as far as like making sure that they have an aligned exit strategy that works for you, and also like in real time, knowing that, you know, you can make them an offer at a price that'll work?
Yeah. I think starting with the mindset that not everybody is going to be a good lead, you know, it's maybe going to be every 1 out of 60, maybe more, maybe less. It's going to actually turn into a deal. So starting there and realizing those people who, yeah, what's your offer? Like those kind of leads, just realizing those aren't the people that you want to do business with.
Right.
But whenever I get somebody like that, you know, yeah, what's your offer? Well, you know, to make you the best offer, I really need to know a little bit about the condition of the property. Can you tell me a little bit about the condition? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in good condition. Okay. I see. So you probably want like market value for your house. And then just kind of go down that road. Well, it's probably not going to work out for us, but I have a really great realtor that I can refer you to. And then if they say, okay, sure, or no, I don't want to work with a realtor, you can play it out as much as you want.
Mm-hmm.
But really qualifying these leads. And I think too many people are worried about wasting their time on appointments with unqualified leads. And I think that's something that you have to do. I think you have to waste your time on some of these unqualified prospects and go meet with an unmotivated seller. That way, whenever you actually get someone who is motivated to sell their house, you'll recognize the difference. And it'll be like night and day, because I like to say you literally cannot mess up a motivated seller. I'd say that one of the only ways you can mess up a deal with a motivated seller is if you're too slow, or you like just aren't confident in the paperwork or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, that's so true. I mean, it's also just getting experience when you're talking to more people. I think for whatever, people can make all sorts of excuses like, it's not a good use of my time. I think for the most part, it's just they have a fear of picking up the phone. I don't think it's so much that they really acknowledge that it's not a good use of their time. If you're in this business, speaking to any type of seller is a good use of your time. So one thing that I've struggled with personally, and a lot of people I've heard mention, is they struggle to figure out the offer price, because their seller is telling them, yeah, the property's in okay shape. And then they're trying to do an ARV based on whatever that means. And it's a kind of a big window of what the offer price could be, because they could kind of analyze it as good shape or bad shape and then find out it's something different. So what does your process look like for analyzing a deal to actually make an offer price. And if that means, you know, however you need to take pictures or if it get an inspection done, but what do you need to do or what does your process look like to get a comfortable number to make an offer price to a seller?
Yeah. So the offer price it's one of those things that there's a lot of stuff on the internet about offer prices and formulas and whatnot. In my business, we don't follow a strict formula because what the formulas don't take into account, it doesn't solve a problem. The formula gives you a number, but it doesn't solve the problem. So one thing with wholesale and real estate is these homeowners, they have an ulterior motive. They don't just want to sell the house to get money. They want to sell the house so they can have peace of mind, you know? So really presenting your offer in a way that solves their problem is a big thing. But when it comes to actually giving the offer, we do run it through the standard 0.7 or 0.75 ARV minus repairs equals your max offer. But you have to know the property. Like if it's a buy and hold property, that formula is probably not going to work. So what I started doing was catering my offers to my buyers. Now I know what my buyers want and I can see it. I can look at a deal and say, okay, you know, Jonathan will pay this much. If I get under contract for this much, I can make $10,000. That's kind of how I work it. Also, I'm always trying to get the other person's number first. And there's I'm sure you've probably heard it before, Jonathan. People say the person who gives their number first loses. I think that's complete crap. It's definitely a benefit to get the other person's number. Like what we want to know what their asking price is. And I'll just ask them. I'll say, what do you want for the property? And if they don't want to give me an answer, I'll ask them a few other questions and I'll loop back and I'll ask, do you know what properties in your neighborhood are selling for? It kind of gets you inside of their head. But if someone's just being really difficult and they don't want to give you a number, they're trying to be savvy. Maybe they've done business before. They're like an old landlord. They know the game, right? There's no shame in giving them a ballpark offer range. So that's what I'll do. I'll say, well, based on what I'm seeing here, we'd probably have to be somewhere between 50 and 60,000. Is that somewhere in your ballpark? And I don't think whenever I do that, I don't feel like I'm losing because the conversation continues and usually they have a lot more respect for you for just being a straight shooter.
So one thing that I think you touched on there that a lot of people might miss is like they won't make an offer if they don't feel like they can get what they need. And then they don't have a process to get what they need. So they don't end up making offers. But to that point, there is no shame in making an offer to continue the conversation and then doing due diligence, which it sounds like is what you're saying of kind of figuring that out and then, you know, getting a better idea from there. But I guess the one question I have for you is what is, you know, your process. We've heard a lot of different processes on this podcast of going out and getting pictures yourself, having the owner take the pictures, a virtual assistant, maybe doing like some snooping, you know, to get an idea of the condition of the property. But I'm curious for you, how do you evaluate the condition of the property? Especially since I know you're someone that likes systems, but also is doing something locally.
Yeah. So I'm a big handshake guy. Let's go sit down at the kitchen table, knee to knee, and let's work this out. So I go to the properties myself. I set the appointments and I take all the pictures myself. Usually with the pictures, I take the pictures after the deal is under contract, before I leave the house. Usually it's just, hey, you mind if I take some pictures real quick? They say, sure, take whatever you want. Yeah. So that's really the process. I go out there. They want to sell. We negotiate a price and, you know, I take pictures and then I say, hey, over the next 7 days, I'm just going to bring my partner back by and then we'll be good to go. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes we get a lockbox. Sometimes we don't. Sometimes we hide the key under the rock, you know, next to the door. it doesn't, we're not really dogmatic when it comes to that. We prefer a lockbox because it's just so much easier, but if we can't get it, it's not the end of the world. Yeah. And that's that. Did that kind of answer the question?
Yeah, for sure. And I guess when you say sometimes that you're going to come back with your partner, is that usually is that a contractor you're coming back with? Is that a prospective buyer? You know, again, it's also kind of leads into some people, they do open houses kind of, some people don't, but you know, is it one of those two people that you're typically coming back with?
Yeah, exactly. I don't really work with contractors, but definitely buyers. Yep. My partner is going to be the buyers. Yep.
For sure. And that makes total sense. So I feel like we've gone through a lot of like the progression of your business. I guess just the last part of it that I think the audience would love to hear about is the progression of systems. You know, you started out dropping hand, you know, letters on people's doorsteps, which is actually a really cool tip, the envelope thing. But I have a feeling that your systems have progressed quite a bit since then. So do you mind just kind of walking through what tools you use, what your systems look like from a high level now, you know, especially how different they probably are from when you first started?
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of keeping it simple. And a few of the tools and systems that I use in my business that I couldn't live without is definitely my CRM. So when I first started out, you know, my CRM was on paper. I switched to like spreadsheet. And then I got a real CRM. Started out using Podio for the longest time. It's free. It's amazing. You can do a lot of cool stuff. And then recently, over the past few months, we switched to Salesforce, which has really been a complete game changer for changing the business. I like to say changing the business into an organization. Because you can literally have team members log in. They can see their daily task. They know exactly what they're doing. They have their own phone numbers. They can call, they can text. So that's one of the major systems. It includes our phone system. Some other systems that I use are a dialer. So my VAs, they are on ZenCall dialer. Mm-hmm. And I don't recommend anybody use that for yourself. Like I'm a big believer in Mojo Dialer. If I'm on the dialer, I want to be on Mojo Dialer. But the VAs, they're on ZenCall. It's just more efficient for managing VAs. And then we have skip tracing, right? That's a big one. Skip tracing. We use Bat skip tracing. I believe that it's some of the highest quality stuff. Been using it forever. I've tried other providers that just weren't good. And one thing I found is you want to talk to the right people. You want to spend your time talking to the right people. Otherwise, you're going to waste your time talking to the wrong people. So it's better just not to go cheap on data. Mm-hmm. And then PropStream. PropStream is one of those ones that I could not live without. I could probably find a way to live without it, but it's just so convenient to, you know, run comps on PropStream and all the data that it has. That's also where we pull a bunch of our lists from is PropStream.
Gotcha. So do you recommend any of those tools as like essentials for a beginner? If you were kind of starting over at trying to be efficient, or do you think those are all things that could or should be added kind of after the fact once you get started or get established?
I think you don't need it, but I would think of these as luxuries. If you can afford it, it will make your life a lot easier. Mm-hmm. But you still have to take action. You know, sometimes we can get caught up in the shiny objects of like, oh, look at this, I want this. And everyone sells these systems that, you know, they sell to your emotions on how it's going to help you get a deal. And it will help you get deals and more efficiently, but you still have to take action. So I think take action first, then get tools that make taking action easier. For example, Deal Machine is one of those systems that I left out. Whenever I first got started, I was writing down the addresses on a piece of paper. Deal Machine made my life so much easier. So, yeah, that's what I would do is like, as you need it, get things. But if you're starting out and you're on a budget, I would say your foundation is going to be Deal Machine, PropStream, and a dialer. You know, gotcha. Those are really some of the things that I'm a big believer in to get your business off the ground. Yeah.
Paul, I feel like there's even a lot more we could touch on, but we just we flew through it, man. And I feel like it was still covering a lot of topics, but there's just a lot more. So I really do think maybe we need a part two just to talk about all the other stuff that got left off, including social media and you know, just digging into like day-to-day process. But Paul, just on that note, man, what is the best way for people to get in touch with you, follow your content, or learn about what you're doing?
Yeah, you can always add me as a friend on Facebook. I think I probably have a few thousand extra spots right now. But or follow me on Instagram. That's probably the best place to message me is Instagram. Send me a direct message. And I am usually pretty good about responding. You can follow me on TikTok, Persistent Paul. Same thing on Instagram, Persistent_Paul. And then we're getting the YouTube channel off the ground, so you can subscribe there and check out the content there as well.
Awesome, man. Very cool. We'll check that out. We'll post all that in the show notes. Dude, I'm glad we were able to finally meet, man. This was a lot of fun, and I think it'll be the first of multiple sessions, and especially giving me more reason to get to Louisville for a trip.
Come on, come to the Bourbon State. Yeah, it was a pleasure, John. I really appreciate it, man. I really appreciate your time.
All right, brother. Well, all the best, and look forward to speaking again soon.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. See ya.
Hey, you millennial millionaire. Are you looking for help getting to the next level in real estate? Are you looking for accountability and strategy to achieve your goals? If so, Jonathan is now taking on one-on-one students and opening a few spots in his private mastermind. It's affordable and welcome to everyone. If you had any questions or think you may need a boost, send Jonathan a message on Facebook or email at johnjfarber@outlook.com.